This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from Jerry Lane Chevrolet and First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. And in studio is Franklin Foyle, state senator from Baton Rouge, former state representative, and he's been at the Capitol far more than he would like to be. Three sessions, and the last one was one that didn't really work out at the way many hoped it would, with lawmakers coming up with a plan in light of a decision in federal court by a ruling by Judge Shelley Dick that lawmakers had violated the Voting Rights Act with their configuration of Louisiana's congressional districts. 877-217-5757 is your number. Talk at talklouisiana.org. And despite the federal court order, a special session ended Saturday. Lawmakers said they were unable to agree on anything. The Senate spent 2 hours grappling with the issue, then took an hour-long recess. They did have a bill before them from Senator Rick Ward that got out of committee, but there weren't 20 votes available to get Senator Ward's bill out of the Senate. Franklin Foyle, let's start there. What would Senator Ward's bill have done?
Well, Jim, good morning. Thank you for having me. Senator Ward's bill did include two majority black districts. They were right at 50%. The problem was there were other areas of the state where parishes were divided, or even in our city, where East Baton Rouge would be divided into three different congressional districts, that he tried to work with different people to solve the problem. You know, and unfortunately, every time he would get an amendment that he would be willing to take to solve the problem for one region, then it created problems in another region. And then another issue that I had sort of proposed, and Senator Ward had actually put it in his bill, since we're in uncharted waters and we don't know what the courts are ultimately going to do as this litigation progresses, he had some language in there that said, if the courts ultimately uphold the first map, then his bill would not be in effect. Unfortunately, Senator Fields and some others objected to that amendment. So at the end of the day, he decided to put his bill back on the calendar, and it'll be in the hands of the courts now.
And Senator Fields is slated to be with us tomorrow, and this is a major issue in our state. It is a debate going on around the country, but in most areas of the country, Alabama being an example, there is not enough time with party primaries to draw new districts, so they'll run under the lines that were being challenged. But in Louisiana, there is time. We don't have an election until November 8th. And it is uncertain how this is going to go. What do you think?
Well, it is, and I'm certainly not going to try to predict, but the district judge has ruled that the maps are not in compliance with federal law. She has indicated that she has requested the maps be submitted to her this week and that she will move forward. I do know that the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the appellate court for this area, has already set this matter on their docket for the first part of July to hear whether or not the injunction should have been entered by the court in this matter for the fall elections. And then I also know that Jeff Landry, on behalf of the state, has filed a writ with the U.S. Supreme Court to try to join our case with the Alabama case. So there are a lot of moving parts out there.
And we don't know. That's the bottom line. But conceivably, the federal judge could end up drawing the maps, and some people don't like the legislature doing this, but many others don't like a federal court doing it either. What would be the best scenario?
Yeah, we're in uncharted waters. I mean, obviously, I voted for the original map, so I'm hopeful that that map will ultimately be found to have been legal. Part of my thought process in voting for that map, this was essentially the same map we voted for in 2010, and I was actually in 2011. I was actually in the House at that time. We did have to change the boundaries because North Louisiana lost some population, but this map was essentially approved, not essentially, it was approved by the Justice Department under President Obama at the time. And I looked at the figures back in 2011, the population, the black population in our state was about 32.8%. Now we're at about 33.2%. So it's about a half percentage increase. But once again, those districts were approved by the Justice Department in 2010. So that at the end of the day, that seemed like the best way to go. We could have, you know, looked at putting just one district in North Louisiana. That was another argument. So there were a lot of things on the table.
Why did we have a challenge this time and didn't have a challenge 10 years ago?
You know, I was thinking about that, and I think I have a pretty good idea. Two things. Number one, we had a Republican governor then, and so you had the governor and the legislature sort of working together on the same page. And number two, back then we were losing a congressional seat. So the big concern back then was, do we lose a congressional seat for North Louisiana and leave them with one congressman, or do we lose one in South Louisiana? We actually lost the one in South Louisiana, which Jeff Landry had, and at the time, Congressman Bustani took over that district.
Landry ran against Bustani and got clobbered in a race for Congress, but things have turned out well for General Landry. 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Hal in Monroe has a question about how much pressure does the legislature get from the sitting members of Congress who obviously like things the way they are? Was there a lobbying effort going on by the staffs of the members of Congress?
There is behind the scenes. I mean, they'll tell you they want to be hands off, but there really is a lot of effort to give us information on why the district should be where they are. And of course, I'm going to listen to them like anyone else, and that's important. But also, there are national implications. So there's pressure from at national levels, because ultimately, whoever controls Congress, really in the House, controls everything.
Well, Baton Rouge is kind of the epicenter of the debate. As you say, the ward configuration would split it three ways. It's currently split up where North Baton Rouge is in the New Orleans district, and that protects Garrett Graves. Now, I think Baton Rouge should have its own district, and we probably, well, not probably, if we count a few metro area entities, if we added the demographics of the Livingston or Ascension, we could easily get to a Baton Rouge district. But it would affect Garrett Graves, who might lose his seat. And then on the other hand, you got Graves, who makes a good point that he's brought many projects to this city. And he makes a case that on bread and butter issues, he's been a good congressman, and some people don't want to lose him. But should we factor those things in, or should we just say what is fair, and we've got one-third African-American population, we got to find a way somehow to get two black majority districts?
Well, that's a complicated question. There's several responses I'd like to give you. First off, I do think Congressman Graves does a good job for this area, especially I know his work on the coastal arena has been very good for our state, as well as transportation issues. But also, if you made East Baton Rouge Parish just one congressperson, you would have to find more voters for Congressman Troy Carter's district to keep his district where it's a majority black district. So you'd have to draw that in a different direction to find those voters.
But it can be done.
I'm sure it can be done, but it's
but it would make it a much more competitive district, Carter's district.
That's right. That's right.
And now it's not competitive.
And that's the problem when we start trying to gerrymander districts to get certain.
But we are gerrymandering. Otherwise, we wouldn't have North Baton Rouge and Troy Carter's district. But you're right. And you know, sometimes be careful what you ask for, because if we had two majority black districts with a slight majority of minority citizens, conceivably Republicans could win all six of them. Conceivably.
Yeah, and that's true, and it depends also what part of the state. I think in the rural areas and in the North Louisiana, black and Democratic voters would do better with a higher percentage. You look at New Orleans, the former seat held by Karen Carter Peterson is now actually majority white, yet she was able to win in that district. So it depends where you are. But generally, the rule of thumb has been if you want to make sure a black voter has the chance to elect someone of their choice, you would like the percentages around 53-54%.
And I've noted, you're right about regional matters. Francis Thompson, he represents a majority black district, doesn't he?
Absolutely.
Okay. But in Baton Rouge, the parish is 46% black, and we've elected a black mayor five straight times.
No, you're right. I think the urban areas are different. Baton Rouge is certainly an example of that.
Ray in Denham Springs. Ray, you're first up for Senator Franklin Foyle. Hi, Ray.
Yes. How you doing?
Fine.
That's good. Look, I just want to know, when voting on these maps, why is it so hard just to do the right thing? Everybody's always drawing maps in their own interest. Isn't it just right just to do right?
All right. Well, we can't take politics out of politics, and these are moving parts, and no matter what action you take, as you talked about with Senator Ward, when you move some people in one area, you're upsetting some people in another area. It's a hard process.
It's a very hard process. Someone came to me the other day and said, why don't you just start in North Louisiana and go down and draw a square till you get your population, and then from there keep drawing it that way. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't work as simple as that, because once you start dividing parishes up, and then you have issues with, you know, making sure that everyone has an opportunity to try to elect the candidate of their choice, it makes it very difficult. And so I try to do the right thing by looking, taking all of this into account and making a decision. But you're exactly right. If anyone says that politics doesn't play a part of it, then they're naive. It is just the reality. And this is going on around the country. You have states with Democrats who are trying to get Democratic
and
seats.
And we saw that in New York. And a federal judge put two Democrats, longstanding Democrats, Carolyn Maloney and Jerry Nadler, against each other, much to the chagrin of the Democrats who overreached in the legislature. Did the Louisiana legislature do the same thing? We'll talk about it with Franklin Foyle back after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. We live in a state that used to be a swing state. It is no longer. In fact, Louisiana voted for the winners of several presidential elections in a row. 1972, Dick Nixon won. We were with Nixon. 76, Jimmy Carter won. We were with Carter. 1980 and 84, Ronald Reagan was victorious. We were with Ronald Reagan. 1988, George Bush the First was victorious. Louisiana was with George Bush the First. 1992 and 96, Bill Clinton won. We were with Bill Clinton. 2000, George Bush won, albeit in controversial fashion, but he won, and Louisiana voted for George Bush. And in 2004, Bush won re-election, and Louisiana voted for George Bush. So that was every election from 72 to 04. We were a bellwether. As the nation went, Louisiana went. And then things changed with Barack Obama. He won twice, and Louisiana voted against him twice. And then in the last two elections, Donald Trump lost the overall vote by 3 million votes first time, and by more than 7 million the second time, and Louisiana overwhelmingly went for Trump, who did win legitimately in the Electoral College in 2016, despite losing the overall vote. But Louisiana does much of its politics now based on race. 95% of the black people voted against Trump twice, and 85% of the white people voted for him twice in Louisiana. And that's where we are. So is Franklin Foyle, the senator, the erudite. I think if there is a moderate in the legislature, it's this man who is a Republican, but he actually came on this show and was brave enough several months ago to say Joe Biden actually won the election. Something most members of our congressional delegation will not do. Mike Wolf in Old Goodwood writes, it appears the dominant principle of the legislature's congressional redistricting was simply the preservation of the status quo. This implies the legislature's principal objective must have been either one, the satisfaction of the incumbent congressman, or two, the preservation of the partisan character of the congressional delegation. Question, considering the importance of reasonable election districts to the people of Louisiana, and the assignment of the responsibility for drawing those districts exclusively to the legislature, why did the lawmakers choose to abandon their discretion to the sitting congressman or to the political parties? Now, Mike's question is a political one, and you could argue that some of the messages within the question, but it appears that the status quo was obviously an objective for many people, Senator.
It was, and there were several options. You know, once again, we could have drawn just one district in North Louisiana, and that's something that I looked at along with some other folks, because that's where all of our population loss was. But at the end of the day, it seemed like the consensus came around. We're lucky that we had six congresspeople still. There's a good chance we might lose one 10 years from now. We knew this map had already been approved previously, we got the consensus around this existing map. There has been some people who have asked me, hey, should you have an independent commission draw these lines versus the legislature? That's got problems as well, because who's going to be on the commission and so forth. It made my job easier, but you have to wonder who are they going to be responsive to as well.
Well, if we go down to five, which we could in 10 years, five members of Congress, then we could just draw the congressional lines the same as the PSC lines. And the PSC is actually, they've got a configuration that people don't complain about, because basically there are three seats that are good for white Republicans and one seat that is good for a black Democrat. And then there's a competitive seat, and Foster Campbell won it, albeit very close. And he may be an unusual candidate. But because of that, we have three Republicans and two Democrats on the PSC. Now, based on the lines that are in place, these races they're not competitive. They won't be unless they're redrawn.
No, you're right. In fact, during this session, we didn't just look at Congress. That's what's gotten all the attention. We did look at PSC, and there was an effort by some to make a second majority black district on the PSC. Same for the Bessie board. We have two majority black districts out of eight. There was a push to make a third. Right now, as they are, though, we ended up with the status quo. They really aren't that competitive. And I hope we don't lose a congressional seat in 10 years. I mean, I love this state and want to work hard to keep people here, but it's going to be a challenge.
We had eight. And often what happens is that people say, well, we didn't lose that many people this time. Well, we never really lose people. We just don't gain as much as the rest of the nation. And it generally takes about 20 years to actually lose a congressional seat. We lost one in 1990, and then we lost one in 2010. So if that cycle continues in 2030, which is 8 years away, we'll lose another one. And Louisiana is not growing the way the rest of the country or much of the South is. And it is amazing when I look back at old electoral maps. Like, let's go back to 1964, the year that Franklin Foyle was born, on October 31st, the night that Doug Morrow beat Ole Miss 11-10, Tiger Stadium.
My doctor who was delivering me that night that morning was worried he might miss the game, so luckily I came in the morning.
I was listening to that game as a little kid in New Orleans, but I remember it well. But anyway, in 1964, when you were born, Florida had 14 electoral votes and Louisiana had 10. Okay. Well, 1964. Today, Florida has 30, and Louisiana has 8. Now, Texas had 25. Texas is up to 40. So Florida and Texas collectively have 70 electoral votes. 877-217-5757. David in Atlanta, do you have a question about redistricting, my friend?
Yes, somewhat regarding redistricting, regarding the 65 Voters' Rights Act. The state of Texas, Republicans held their convention over the weekend and put a plank in their platform to eliminate the 1965 Voters' Rights Bill. They may as well call themselves the party of the KKK or the David Duke Party.
All right. Well, they did do that. I don't know if we would call them the David Duke Party, but the Supreme Court is going to rule on this.
They are. And, you know, unfortunately, you have some extremes in both parties that you can't control. But, you know, ultimately, right now, what the law is in effect, then we're going to abide by the law. And as far as the redistricting maps are concerned across the country, I think ultimately these cases will land at the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will rule. And whatever they rule, that's the law of the land. We'll live with it.
All right, 877-217-5757. Tom on Bluebonnet asked the distinctions between the Rick Ward map and the Cleo Fields map. Senator Fields had a map that was defeated in committee. What were the distinctions?
There were several. Senator Ward's map recreated the 6th congressional district, so it would actually be the new majority black district, and it would be an EBR and then have some of the river parishes, while Senator Fields' map would make the Monroe district the majority black district, although it came all the way down to Baton Rouge. Senator Ward's map, I thought, was in some ways tighter as far as the districts than Senator Fields' map, but they both had problems we needed to work through. And quite frankly, I don't know if we would have ever gotten there with the litigation going on, but it was clearly a lot of big issues that had to be decided in short order.
All right. Now, a listener reflecting on what you said about Charlie Bustani and Jeff Landry ended up running against each other. A listener, as what happened in 1990, it was Jerry Huckabee and Jim McCreary. They ended up in the same district. So inevitably, when you lose a seat, somebody loses, and you can't have six people in five seats. And now we have six seats, and we have five Republicans, white Republicans, and one black Democrat. And it's going to be fascinating to see what Shelley Dick did. But her ruling was quite exhaustive as far as going through the history of Louisiana and how racial politics are a factor. And surprise, surprise, it's the elephant in the room. People really don't want to talk about it. But Franklin Foyle, if you were a white Democrat, I don't think you'd be in the state Senate right now.
It would be very difficult. That's just sort of where we are these days. It's hard for a moderate person in the Democratic Party who is white to win the way the districts are drawn. Here in East Baton Rouge Parish, for example, we have four senators. You have myself, Cleo Fields, Regina Barra, and Bodie White. So you have two white Republicans and two black Democrats. And that's really what our city is. It's about 50-50, and that's how it's shaken out.
It is indeed. And four very active lawmakers, too, which is good, but from different sides of the political spectrum. And even in the same party, I think there's a big distinction between Bodie White and Franklin Foyle. And we'll talk more when we return. 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow is producing and signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Jerry Lane Chevrolet. 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org for Senator Franklin Foyle, lawyer and Navy veteran. And he is a person who is well-liked by even Democrats. Governor Edwards likes you. Did he veto any of your bills?
He did not, and I appreciate that. He and I have a very good working relationship. We started out in the House together. He was Army man. I'm a Navy man. We're both attorneys, and so we've worked well together. We don't always agree, but we can at least have discussion. And if he does have concerns about my bills, I appreciate it because he'll let me know in advance his concerns, and we work together very well.
Again, 877-217-5757. Still time to talk with Senator Franklin Foyle. Nick in College Town. Hello, Nick.
Hey, good morning, Jim. Great show. I just wanted to get Senator Foyle's perspective on President Tate and LSU, his first real session working with the legislature, and wanted to know Senator Foyle's perspective on how President Tate performed in LSU this session. I'll hang up and listen.
I've gotten to know President Tate pretty well over the last several months, and I've been very impressed with President Tate. He has really been very proactive coming down to the legislature, mm-hmm. working with people down there to get to know us and to outline his vision for LSU. One of the big projects that I worked with him on is to get a new ROTC building. It's going to be an ROTC cybersecurity building. He put a lot of high priority in getting that done, and so we got the funding to the legislature, and it's going to be a beautiful new building and program at LSU.
And this year, because of COVID money, state was able to do things like that. When you arrived, it was not that we were losing the Katrina money and having to adjust, and Governor Jindal, and lost the Stelly money too. Things were cut, and in some cases by necessity, and particularly higher education, which Governor made a call, disagreed with by many, including yours truly, to cut higher education a lot, but it's a lot better when you have money, isn't it?
Oh, it's much easier. In fact, this was a great session because of the money that we had available to put in infrastructure. I mean, for the first time, we're making a real investment in the Mississippi River Bridge. One of my big projects is to get the LSU lakes cleaned up, and so I've really worked hard to get funding for that. That's going to start later this month. So it makes things much easier. Now, one of the downsides when you have a lot of money and you don't have budget problems, then you see people bringing a lot of bills that are, you know, the social issue bills and some things like that, because you're not having to focus on the budget and you have to deal with those. But overall, it's really nice when you have funding to do your programs and your infrastructure.
John Spain was with us not so long ago. I know he, with BRAC, is involved in that Lakes project. How's that going?
I'm really excited about it. We have enough money now to clean up all of the lakes but University Lake. And when I say clean up, we're going to dredge the lakes as well as put some bike paths and walkways along the lakes. That project is supposed to start later this month. You should see equipment out there. And then this year in the budget, I helped secure another $20 million for the future to clean up University Lake. So we have the money now to get them all done. And look, they're a crown jewel for Baton Rouge. When you drive into our city, you see those lakes. Right now, they're an eyesore. And so I look forward to getting those cleaned up, mm-hmm. and it brings our community together.
Well, you mentioned Nick in College Town mentioned President Tate. He's moved back to the president's house. And one of his neighbors is Brian Kelly, who's on the lakes. So lot of LSU firepower there, and those homes are quite valuable, I hear.
It's great real estate, and they both have beautiful homes and beautiful location. My family, especially during COVID, did a lot of walking, and so we'd walk around the lakes. And, you know, once again, they bring the community together. People from all over come to the lakes to bike, ride, walk. And with this cleanup effort, you can start using canoes, you can fish. It'll be wonderful.
Now, I know you represent many of the people who work at LSU. But do you represent LSU proper? Is the campus in your district?
I have half the campus. So if you
Highland Road, the other half?
Senator Fields. Senator Fields has where the stadium is, the south side. I have the north side where the law school and the lab school are on campus. So I do have half the campus. And I have
Who has Tiger Stadium?
Senator Fields has Tiger Stadium.
Does he really?
But I represent plenty of people who attend games there.
Yes, and the first game, I think it's September 10th, the first Baton Rouge Tiger Stadium game for Brian Kelly will be against Southern University. So maybe you and Senator Fields can lock arms, and it will be quite an event, won't it?
It will, and I hear both bands are going to play, which will be exciting. I think it's a great opportunity for our community to come together.
I think so, and long, long overdue. LSU has played every state school with a football team except for Southern and Grambling. Hopefully the G-men will play as well. Now, Governor Edwards next year is all juiced up because Army comes to Tiger Stadium in his final year as governor. Final year unless he runs again. He can't run again this time, though. How do you view the 2023 election right now?
Right now, I think it's wide open. It's hard to really predict what's going to happen. I mean, a lot of people are predicting that a Republican will win because you've had a Democrat in office for 8 years. But, you know, once again, it depends on the candidate. You know, when John Bell, Governor Edwards first announced, I was a personal friend of his, but I didn't really think he had a chance. And of course, he proved the critics wrong and won. So it's going to depend on who the candidate is ultimately, and we'll have to see how it shakes out.
What do you hear? Who's running?
So far, of course, the same people you're hearing, Attorney General Jeff Landry, Billy Nungesser, John Schroeder, for sure. All three of them seem pretty intent to get in the race. I'm really not sure who's going to get in on the Democratic side. I've not heard anything other than other than speculation.
And generally, there is at least one member of Congress running, and I think there will be at least one member of Congress running this time, and it could be Graves. It could be
Senator Cassidy.
Or Kennedy.
Yeah.
Kennedy's on his way to reelection unless something unusual happens, and he's got lots of money that he could probably transfer to his state campaign if he so chose. Now, Kennedy's he'll be 71 in a few months, so he's not a young guy the way he was when he ran for attorney general in 1991 and lost to Richard Aiyub, but he's always wanted to be governor. Why is there this lure to be governor of Louisiana, Senator Foyle?
Well, when you're governor, you're in charge of everything. I mean, you have amazing power to make appointments, to set policy. I mean, you're really in charge and can make a big difference to our state. You know, you can go to Washington, and that's a great opportunity, you know, obviously to be a U.S. senator, but you can't really fix problems up there. When you're here in Louisiana, you can actually fix problems, and you're in charge. You've got a lot of power.
All right. Holly in the Garden District asks, you, Senator Foyle, have a good relationship with Governor Edwards, but obviously other members of your party do not. Why has there been so much aversion to this governor from the Republican hierarchy in the legislature?
I don't know that there is a widespread aversion to this governor. I know that the president of the Senate, Paige Cortez, who I work with, does work with the governor. I mean, you do have some people who are going to be always critical of someone from the other party. And part of that, I guess, is just to escalate their own political standing. But you know, I think if we're going to get things done, we need to be civil and work and try to work together as much as possible.
And we did have an override of a governor's veto, and you voted to override, did you not?
I did, and that was not a personal matter at the governor. It was simply a disagreement on policy. He knew where I stood on that, and once again, that was his prerogative as well as governor. So this is not. Unfortunately, this matter will probably be going on for quite some time as we go through the process.
Well, another listener notes that this dispute, some people say, you know, it's more than just a numbers game. And for those who have said that one third of six is two, and if we've got a third black population, we should have two majority-minority districts. Well, And that has been debunked by some who say, look, there are other factors. But it's a good question. It's a good question about whether there would be some gnashing of teeth on the Republican side if there were three black Democrats and three white Republicans. I would think then we might be talking about overrepresentation.
No, that's a very fair question. And, you know, once again, you have to look at where people live when you draw these lines. But you're exactly right. There is some politics in play. And if anyone says otherwise, they're not being upfront with you about it.
Mm-hmm. It was Tip O'Neill who said all politics is local. And you think of how decisions on the state level affect national politics in a number of ways. And this is one of them.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate that Congress is so polarized, because when you elect someone to Congress, whatever party they're in, they're going to vote lock, step, and barrel with that party. And the other party, who's the minority, really doesn't have any say. And so that's sort of where we are nowadays.
And it wasn't always the case. I recall in, I'm trying to think of the year, I guess it was 1988. Right. No, it was 96, 1996. Marjorie McKithen and Richard Baker. There's an example of a Democrat and a Republican who fought it out in the 6th District, and it was a razor-thin margin. Baker held on, but Marjorie McKithen was almost elected. And because of that, Senator Baker, who was a conservative Republican, he had to at least listen to the other side. And on occasion, he might very well have made a vote that was contrary to what his party wanted, because he had to protect his flank. But today, it's basically you're either on one side or the other, almost all over the country. There are only like 30 competitive seats left.
Yeah, and that's an example of that race of two people I know, very good candidates, very good people who both would have done a good job. But that's where we are. I'll tell you just a quick story, which is interesting. In my last race, when I was in a runoff with a Democratic candidate, mm-hmm. there were some third-party mail pieces against me coming out from an educational group, or it purported to be an educational group, and I couldn't figure out why they were sending this out. I learned that it was actually funded by a group that Michael Bloomberg was funding, and apparently they were going around the country trying to shape the legislatures, because they do the redistricting for Congress.
Yeah, and it's that precise now. And state legislatures make a huge difference. And one of the big things they chime in on is redistricting. And right now we're in the courts, and we'll see where it goes. And you have any prediction?
I hate to predict on that, since the litigation is ongoing, but you know, I felt like I've done the right thing based on what I know at this point. But I'm going to let it play out and respect what the court does.
Well, Senator Foyle, thanks for your service. Thanks for coming in, and it's always a pleasure. And Franklin Foyle's a good man, Navy veteran, still involved, aren't you?
I just retired in November after 30 years.
Well deserved.
Thank
well
you,
deserved,
Jim.
And a lawyer of note in our community, and from a legal family. Thank you, sir. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And talk at talklouisiana.org. Lines open. Robin Dow producing. And it was 4 weeks ago today that the tragedy in Uvalde, Texas occurred. 19 students, two teachers, shot by an assailant. Obviously a deranged 18-year-old kid who bought his AR-15 on his 18th birthday, and he blew away a classroom in an attack that perhaps could have been averted to some extent if law enforcement people had reacted more quickly. But it is a legitimate debate on whether we have enough gun safety legislation in place in this country to prevent tragedies of this sort from occurring. In a bipartisan 20-member U.S. Senate group got together and decided that we need to do some things, like tightening registration at gun shows and making sure that we have red flag laws on the books. But it's basically window dressing. We did have a ban on these kinds of weapons for 10 years. And it would be hard to do anything about the guns that are already in place. But in this case, this kid who was 18 bought his weapon on his birthday. If the law had been 21, presumably he would not have been able to do this. And so it is a legitimate course of debate. and something needs to be done to make sure that we don't have repeated incidents of this. And other countries have problems with mental illness, but they don't have mass shootings the way we do in the United States. We have well over 90% of these kinds of attacks, and it has something to do with mental illness, but it also has something to do with availability to high-powered firearms. And this has not dissuaded many from seizing the moment and politicking on this. Eric Greitens, a Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate in Missouri, released a violent new political advertisement this week showing himself racking a shotgun and accompanying a team of men armed with assault weapons as rifles as they storm SWAT team style into a home in search of rhinos. That's Republicans in name only. Join the MAGA crew, M-A-G-A. We know what that means. Greitens, the former Navy SEAL, declares in the ad, get a rhino hunting permit. There's no bagging limit, no tagging limit, and it doesn't expire until we save our country. This ad by Greitens was just the latest, but perhaps most menacing in a long line of Republican campaign ads featuring firearms and seeking to equate hardcore conservatism with the use of deadly weapons. This is from Alan Feuer in the New York Times today. It was posted online less than a week after the House Select Committee investigating the January 6, 2021 assault on the Capitol showed how threats by former President Trump against his own Vice President Mike Pence helped to instigate a mob attack on the building. And during a committee hearing, J. Michael Luttig, a former federal judge widely respected by conservatives, suggested that President Trump and his allies posed a clear and present danger to American democracy. The use of violent rhetoric has steadily increased in Republican circles in recent months as threats and aggressive imagery have become more commonplace in community meeting rooms, congressional offices, and on the campaign trail. And unfortunately, this is a partisan issue. And the New York Times in Sunday's paper said, last November, hours after a jury acquitted Kyle Rittenhouse of two shooting deaths during anti-racism protests in 2020, a Florida gun dealer created an image of him brandishing an assault weapon with the slogan, in all caps, "Be a man among men." Rittenhouse was not a man when he killed two people, wounded another in Kenosha, Wisconsin. He was 17. But he aspired to be like one, and the firearms industry, backed for years by research and focus groups, knows that other Americans do too. Firearm purchases have skyrocketed. Background checks rose from $8.5 million in 2000 to $38.9 million last year. The number of guns is outpacing the population, and the Times reports that women, spurred by appeals that play on fears of crime and being caught unprepared, are the fastest-growing segment of buyers. Now, those of us who think that we have a gun safety issue in this country are accused of politicking when a tragedy occurs, and one of those doing just that is the congresswoman from the great state of Georgia, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Here is a message, and by the way, I'm now on her mailing list. She's joined Senator Kennedy and President Trump. I'm getting emails from Representative Greene, Congresswoman Greene, and yesterday she sent me this.
But here we do have the regime, the Democrats in place right now, who are doing everything they can to take away our rights, claiming and putting it all under the label protecting our children. They aren't protecting our children. They're ruining our children's futures, taking away their freedoms, and taking away our rights. So this week in Washington, pay attention and watch closely. I'll be voting no. I'm encouraging every single Republican in Washington, D.C., members of the House and members of the Senate to vote no on all of this radical Democrat gun control that has no common sense, is completely useless, and is going to hurt Americans' right to bear arms. That's our responsibility as Republicans. Shame on Democrats for more failure in Washington, D.C. And the radical left will be there. They'll be the ones fighting to take away your rights while none of the freedom-loving Second Amendment supporters and gun owners, you guys won't be in Washington because you haven't been organized by the groups that you pay your money to be there. And that makes me unhappy. I'm sorry for that, and it needs to change.
All right, that's Marjorie Taylor Greene, who represents a district in the Atlanta DMA. Now, Atlanta has become a city that is, of course, a Democratic stronghold. And Georgia is the only purple state in the SEC. As I noted yesterday, there are 20 Republicans in the U.S. Senate in the 11 SEC states and only two Democrats, and they both won by the skin of their teeth, Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff in Georgia. And so with the Republicans having a 20-2 advantage in the SEC and the Senate being 50-50, do the math, and that means Democrats in the other 39 states hold an advantage of 48-30. It wouldn't even be close. And the South used to be a Democratic stronghold. In 1913, when the last Republican was elected, it took another 48 years for a Republican to win a seat. And that was John Tower, who won a special election in Texas after Lyndon Baines Johnson was elected vice president. But the times have changed. We are Trump country. We are Republican country. And the Louisiana delegation in Washington, all of them voted against this House measure that was basically window dressing. There was nothing really substantial in that House bill as far as gun safety measures. It did not include a ban on assault weapons. And yet every member of our delegation, with the exception of Troy Carter, voted against it. 877-217-5757. James in Metairie. James, you're on.
Good morning to you, Jim. Well, I just saw breaking news. A school tuition voucher program in Maine must be allowed to pay for religious schools, the Supreme Court ruled today. Now, go back about 10 years. Do you remember those embarrassing episodes where some of the legislators were freaking out? Oh, we can't have any money go to the Muslims. We can't have any money going to the Scientologists. No, it's just like school prayer. They don't want prayer in schools, people. They only want their prayer. Stay tuned.
All right. Well, there are some who make no bones about it. They believe we live in a, quote, Christian nation. And the Supreme Court is populated by some Roman Catholics who are conservative Catholics. And, of course, there are some Jewish people on the court as well. Stephen Breyer, who's going off, is Jewish. And the majority, talk about overrepresentation, the majority of the court is Roman Catholic. Coney Green, Kavanaugh, Roberts, Alito, Thomas. They're all Roman Catholics, and I believe so is Sotomayor. Kagan is Jewish as well. The only Protestant on the court is Neil Gorsuch. The House committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol will reconvene today. It will be carried by WRKF at noon today, detailing President Trump's personal involvement in a pressure campaign on state officials to subvert the will of the voters, as well as a scheme to put forward false claims of electors in seven states to keep him in power. It's the fourth meeting, and the committee is calling on the Secretary of State for the great state of Georgia, a Republican, Brad Raffensperger, and he will testify, and he's the one, Donald Trump's on tape saying, Brad, I need 11,870 votes. That's what I need. That's what I need. And if that's not pressure when it comes from the president, I don't know what is, but it should be a riveting hearing today, and we'll be talking about that and more tomorrow. Cleo Fields, the main guest. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Jerry Lane Chevrolet. For Robin Dow, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.